There's some good stuff in there.
I like that we got in like a little mini fight.
I did too. That makes good radio, you know? Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
So today's episode is an episode in which we're going to set the stage for a series of episodes that will unfold over the next month or so. We're calling this series Founder Origins. This series includes in-depth interviews with several well-known founders like Heaton Shaw, Erica Douglas, Steli Efti, and Patrick McKenzie. And in each of those interviews, I sat down with those folks and talked with them about their childhood, about how their experiences growing up shaped them becoming founders, shaped who they became as entrepreneurs.
The reason I feel like this is so important is that I have a very strong belief that knowing yourself and knowing how you handle situations, how you handle stress, how you handle positive things, and what you shy away from naturally, and being able to identify that in yourself is absolutely critical to succeeding, especially as a founder, because you're going to run into hard things and you got to know how you're going to handle them and sometimes talk yourself around them. And I believe that your childhood has a major impact on this. Now, I don't know the research behind it. My stuff is more from like personal experience, but hearing these founder origin stories, I think it's important for all of us to hear both how other founders, how they were brought up and how they succeeded, and then to reflect on our own stories and maybe learn something about ourselves.
And I think there's lots of layers here. I mean, knowing yourself and being able to anticipate how you handle situations, like you said, I think is critical to success. I think for some of us, our early lives carry lots of information about who we really are, and not only how we handle adversity, but where our sweet spots are. I think we like to think of entrepreneurs as sort of self-made people, and there's an element of that, but I also think that there's an element of hardwiring to our personalities, to what excites us, to the kinds of people that we really are. And so when we can look back on our childhoods and who we were as children, we get some interesting information about what thriving might look like for us. So we're certainly not engaging these stories to kind of blame parents for bad things or to present the perspective that you have to have a certain kind of childhood to be a successful founder. None of those are true. This is very much a qualitative reflection on these particular lives and how they were shaped by the upbringing and the childhood that they had.
So to dive more into this, I mean, I think the conversation today between you and I is kind of like, how does our childhood impact who we become, and why might this be important to learn this about yourself?
And I don't know that this is really a question anymore in the scientific literature. I think there is overwhelming evidence that the kind of childhood we have shapes who we become, both personality-wise, both physiologically, the kind of health behavior, the kind of health outcomes that we have. A recent study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study was a sort of giant study that looked at health data for 17,000 people. It was a collaboration between the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and Kaiser in San Diego. And that study, it's called the ACEs study, really created a very strong scientific foundation for there being a very clear and substantial connection between early life adversity and later health behavior, later physiological health. So for example, someone who's had a lot of childhood adversity, maybe grew up in a home where there was substance abuse present, someone was incarcerated, there was maybe physical neglect happening and some physical abuse. Someone like that who has multiple categories of childhood adversity is much more likely to have heart disease, certain kinds of cancer, diabetes, mental illness, all kinds of health outcomes.
Right. I remember you reading these stats to me, whatever it was, 7, 8 years ago, when I think you wrote your dissertation relating to this. And the stats are insane. Like, if you have one ACE, which is, again, an adverse childhood experience, so it's like having physical abuse or growing up under the poverty line, or there's different things. But if you had one of them, then you were a small percentage more likely to have all these bad health impacts. And if you had two of them, it was like twice as much. And if you had three of them, it was just ridiculous how high the percentage was that you were going to be obese or be a drug addict or at least be prone to that or have high anxiety or depression. I mean, it was a marked study with an N of 17,000. I think it's widely accepted that it was a well-done study.
Yeah, and I think it raises a really interesting sort of point about the role of adversity in shaping who we become. And to foreshadow a little bit, if all of these founder stories that we're including in this series, there's some pretty significant adversity happening. People who lost parents at a young age or people who struggled with a lot of isolation or anxiety. There was enough adversity, I think, to really create a lot of strength and tenacity and perseverance in these people. But there wasn't so much adversity that it overwhelmed their minds and bodies. So I think that's a really interesting balance that I saw in all of the founders that I interviewed. And that's very in line with the psychological research, which paints this picture that most people have some tough stuff happening when they're kids. Most of us don't have a totally idyllic childhood where our needs are met all the time. But there is a point at which too much adversity really dampens development so that people typically aren't able to achieve a pretty high level of success.
Right. And I think the adversity and kind of having a lower chance of success based on these stats is one element of what we're talking about. But even if you didn't have an abusive father or an alcoholic mother, there's still so much you can learn about who you are and how you handle situations. I think about how I learned to resolve conflicts. I think about how I learned to deal with stress or not. I think about kind of my at-rest, anxiety, depression, insecurity levels. I mean, these are all things that you picked up either from your parents genetically or from the nurture part of it, you know, from viewing how they handled situations. And knowing your levels and knowing what you're prone to, it can really help you realize when you are not pushing into something that you should be, because kind of your DNA, and I use that term loosely, DNA, but it's like your upbringing has shaped you in a way that you're always anxious about taking risks, as an example. Like, when I talk about risk tolerance all the time, and I think risk tolerance is a combination of kind of anxiety and impulse control. And these things, you know, are all set at an early age, I think. And you can certainly overcome them if you're aware of them, but it's like your natural predisposition towards taking risks or not can impact your entire life, right? I mean, it can impact your entire career as a founder and how you look at every opportunity that comes your way. And so knowing that about yourself is pivotal. I mean, it can literally be the difference between success and failure. I know that growing up, my parents were fairly risk averse, and there are anxiety disorders that run on both sides of my family. And so naturally, I'm going to have a higher than normal anxiety level, which tends to lead to insecurity and maybe not wanting to take as large risks as other people want to. Knowing that about myself, it's helped me compensate in a way that when I get in situations where I feel like I don't want to do things, I try to look at it and say, is this naturally pulling me away? And should I really be pushing into this opportunity that it's actually something that I should be pursuing? Such as acquiring my first app or buying Hittail and writing a big check for that. Like, all that was very scary because that's not what I naturally do. But I pushed through it anyways because I realized that the opportunity on its own merits on paper was good enough to warrant me sucking it up and overcoming kind of this natural resistance to taking those risks.
And some of the thing that you're talking about, our sense of inferiority, our sense of fear, the things that have hurt us, you could wrap that up into a term. The Jungians have a term called the shadow. Very simply, it's sort of the dark side of us, the dark side of who we are. But the thing about the shadow, the thing about our sense of anxiety or inferiority or fear, is that when we know it, when we can see it, when we have a pretty good grasp on it, it can also be a source of great strength. I mean, I think the anxiety that you came kind of hardwired to the world with, and then the risk-averse family that you grew up in, you have not acted out of those nature and nurture components without awareness. Because you're aware of the level of anxiety that's sort of present in you, you're able to use it well and manage it well. So when we don't have awareness about these issues, then we kind of act them out without knowing what's happening. But once we pay attention and spend some time looking back at our childhood, both for the strengths and the weaknesses there, then we can figure out how to use those parts of us, those sort of hurt parts of us, as strengths, or we can let our lives be informed by them in a way where they don't rule us.
And that's, you know, you touched on strengths versus weaknesses there. And that's what I think is important is these founder origins, it's not all about weaknesses, right? It's not all about adverse childhood experiences or how you might have a high anxiety level. I see it as figuring out what really energizes you and the things that you do that you get in flow state or that kind of make you invigorated to work more, to get more done. Because as a founder, you have to think about what things am I doing that are going to push this business forward and that are going to build momentum for me. So for myself, I realized that when I was younger, I was brought up to be competitive. I was brought up to be very goal-oriented. And I like to go off on my own and work for extremely long periods of time. So if I had a preference, I would probably work 15-hour days, 16-hour days, because I'm a momentum player. When I get started, I can just roll with things. I have a hard time getting started, and I have a hard time stopping. But if I could work, say, 3, 4, 15-hour days a week, that would be my perfect work week. Now, obviously, I can't do that because I have a family and that kind of stuff. But knowing the goal orientation and the level of focus that I have has allowed me to kind of optimize my working environment and optimize my working scenarios and allows me to get more done and be more productive. Also realizing that I absolutely despise interruptions and I actually get angry I used to get angry when I worked at a credit card company and people would come into my cubicle all the time and I started working from home because of that. So it's not just about weaknesses and combating those. I think it's a lot about learning about your strengths and doubling down on those. I am such a proponent of the strengths finder approach, finding out what works for you and basically investing in that.
I think you also, given your goal-oriented nature, you have struggled when the goal timeline is too long. So you really need to turn something around in 12 months. And anything much longer than that, you start to get, frankly, like really discouraged, really bored. There's not enough kind of incentive if your goal timelines are stretched out too long. And I think that's totally hardwired in you from your childhood.
Again, that is so important for me to know because if you look back at, say, the past 15 years of my working career and then of my consulting career and then of my product career, there were patterns there. And I didn't realize them until, you know, I was about five or six years into it. And I started realizing that there was this 12 to 18 month timeline on most things that I did. And realizing that and coming to grips with it and not feeling guilty about that, you know, not feeling discouraged that I had these short time frames has made me a much better entrepreneur.
And I think for me, reflecting a little bit on my childhood, you know, I grew up in a family where people didn't really talk really very much at all and certainly didn't talk about hard things, but there were lots of hard things happening in our family and around us. And sometimes I think my greatest act of rebellion, like I'd never done drugs or, you know, I never had a wild period, but my greatest act of rebellion was to become a psychologist because I completely went against the family culture. But that's, I think, an example of this finding the things that maybe were hard as a kid or were hurtful, but like using them to fuel a new way of being. And for me to decide, like, I think it's important for people to talk about hard things. And that wasn't happening when I was a kid. And so therefore, I end up spending my life essentially doing that. I think it could have gone a different way, but it took some awareness on my part and some encouragement from people outside the family to help me figure out how to use what was missing in my household to be something that was a big part of who I became and what I end up doing as a vocation.
To simplify this, I feel like I've seen a couple of archetypes, and this is an oversimplification, but from the successful founders I've seen, there are those who kind of fall into this bucket of they were encouraged and they had loving families, and that encouragement made them succeed and they were encouraged to set goals and to achieve. So they've done well. And then there's this other side that maybe had some of that, but perhaps has more demons that are driving them. And they might hear their dad's voice or their mom's voice, for that matter, saying, you know, you're not good enough for this. And that's the motivation that drives them. And I think knowing which bucket you fall into, and like I said, there could be other buckets, but to simplify it to this, I think knowing which side of that you fall on will help you not kind of tailspin, right? Because if you don't realize that you're running from demons and that you're running from stuff that maybe you're still hearing that voice in your head that your parents said to you when you were 6 years old, not realizing that can dramatically like have a negative impact on what you're doing, because you won't realize why you're taking a lot of the actions that you are.
Right. You'll be kind of playing out this schema in your head or playing a role, but not understanding it.
Right. It's like being reactive to something that isn't there anymore physically, but it is ingrained in you.
And that's dangerous. It can be dangerous.
Yeah. So does the research generally agree that it's a combination of nature and nurture? For those who aren't familiar with those terms, nature would be your kind of your genetics and your DNA. And then nurture is how you were raised, right? How your parents interacted with you, how your siblings interacted with you and that kind of thing. Is it generally agreed that it's a combination of those two?
Absolutely. I don't really think there's a question about that anymore. I remember being in college and having the nature-nurture debate. I don't really think it's a debate. I think there's some debate about specific aspects of growing up and how much they're influenced by genetics versus environment. But there's this whole new field called epigenetics, which is basically how our experiences in life, so our nurture, so to speak, turn on or cause certain genes to be exhibited. So even at the biological level, there's this combination of nature and nurture. The kind of environment that you're in, experiences that happen at certain points in your development, can control whether certain genes are exhibited or not exhibited.
I really like this concept because it explains a lot, right? It explains how someone could come from two alcoholic or two drug addicted parents, but brought up in the better environment than that, perhaps they're adopted or perhaps whatever, the parents clean up, they may never become addicts, but they are prone towards doing that. And if they're brought up in an environment where that is around them all the time, it can activate that gene. There's, you know, not only these diseases that I'm talking about, like alcoholism and addiction, but I think there could be things like anger or high anxiety or high depression that could be activated or not in you, depending on how stressful your childhood was. And realize I'm not speaking from research, right? This is my only own personal opinion, but I like to think it's a good theoretical model for me to hold.
And I think it's pretty consistent with most of our developmental theories at this point.
So I think that knowing that it's this combination of nature and nurture, this is why I think it's helpful not only to look at how you were raised, like what experiences you went through as a kid, because that's the nurture part, but to look at how your parents viewed the world. And when I became old enough, and it must have been in my 20s or maybe it was in college, I suddenly realized like, oh, my parents, A, weren't perfect, and B, really had their own strengths and weaknesses, right? I mean, I think we all come to that realization as we become an adult, and it's kind of shocking. But looking back, I can see that my dad was risk averse. He was never an entrepreneur, and I think it was because he was scared. He also had a family and with four kids. He was trying to take care of everybody, but he never reached out on his own. As a result, I mean, I think I didn't really become who I wanted to be as an entrepreneur until I was in my 30s. And I think that part of watching my parents do things and then trying to break those patterns of essentially not being an entrepreneur took me like a decade, right? It took me probably most of my 20s to fully come to who I was and who I wanted to be, because I had watched behaviors as a kid that were counter to being an entrepreneur.
And interestingly, like your dad had his own story of growing up where he was essentially raised by a single mother and his dad had a lot of addiction problems. So you have like layers of generations where these things are built over time. So it's not even just understanding your parents, but their parents and kind of the lineage that you come from and how that shapes your view of the world or your kind of family culture around how one lives.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting. I bet in a lot of cases, I know in mine in particular, if I look back one generation, things are so-so. If I look back two generations, things were kind of a catastrophe. Like there's just all types of craziness there in terms of divorce and addiction and poverty and all other manner of things I won't go into here. But like, I feel pretty I'll say lucky as a combination of hard work and probably being blessed and having good parents and all these other things. I feel lucky to be where I am compared to what two or three generations ago looked like in my family.
And that's sort of interesting in the sense that your dad didn't become an entrepreneur, but he was a pattern breaker. Like, he redefined his life and himself and made a very different kind of life for you and your siblings than he had. So even though he didn't have the entrepreneurial sort of sense financially, he was kind of a social entrepreneur, I guess, if I could misuse that term. And that's what you have done. Like, I am now going to break a different pattern and craft a different way of living. And there's even some of that openness, though, that was passed down to you.
For sure. For sure. And I like the idea or the concept you just said of a pattern breaker, because that's very much, I think, what my parents were. The patterns in the family before them are very different. And so we were raised, I think, with a much higher emphasis on education and goal orientation and parents who were very caring and loved us. And so our upbringing was, I think, dramatically different than theirs were. So if someone's listening to this and they want to try to get to know themselves more or kind of take some of their childhood experiences that they can remember and use it to identify things in themselves, is there an approach or a framework or something that they can use? I mean, would this be the kind of thing where you'd go off on a retreat for a day and make a bunch of notes and then try to think about yourself? Or is it like taking StrengthsFinder? Like, that was actually helpful for me. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, StrengthsFinder has nothing to do with early life history. It has to do with kind of how you're functioning right now.
Right.
I mean, I think there are a lot of things that you could do. I think this is also, if you are listening to this and realizing that there's a lot here for you, this would be a great piece of life to kind of go into therapy about and have a really experienced listener help listen and help you kind of put some of these pieces together. But for the do-it-yourself at home version, I think a couple exercises would be to think about maybe your earliest memory and maybe write that down and maybe sort of think about why that memory is important or significant. I think anything that you do related to rethinking the relationships in your family, who was close to who, which parent did you feel more comfortable with, which parent did you go to with what kind of trouble, what did your parents communicate about entrepreneurship or about non-traditional ways of living? There's actually this very long and comprehensive lifestyle assessment that Adlerian psychologists use, which I think is publicly available, and we could put a link to it in the show notes. And it's like probably way more than you would want to do in a day, but it gives you lots of good questions to ask yourself about family history and the relationships in your family, and it has kind of worksheets and things that you can put together by yourself. And then again, if you're realizing that there's a lot here for you, be a great time to just talk with someone more trained about how to make sense of all of it.
Yeah, the bottom line is this is a huge topic, right? I mean, there's reams and reams of research on this. And probably, I think over time, over the past, 50 or 100 years, there's been, like you said, a debate over whether it was this or that. And now we're finding out that it was both nature and nurture. And it's a complex topic. And so I don't think you need a PhD in it to kind of look at your own origin and figure out how that's going to impact who you are and kind of impact how you interact in situations. And I think to break it down to its most simple concept, for me, it's about figuring out what your strengths and weaknesses are and trying to deduce that from your upbringing and from what you're naturally wired to do, and then figuring out how to push on your strengths and how to basically like overcome your weaknesses, or how to, I would almost say, like shy away, or how to not let them overcome you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to argue with you a little bit here in the sense that, yes, I think it's about strengths and weaknesses. And no, you don't need a PhD to sort of figure some of those things out. But I think there are much deeper levels for many folks related to their feelings about their upbringing. And you're assuming that all of that is kind of readily conscious and you're able to think about it in a rational way. And frankly, I don't think many people are.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think many of these memories and experiences, especially when we're young children, they're either pre-verbal or they're before our own capacity for abstract reasoning. So they're not necessarily encoded in a way that's kind of rational and logical and easy to talk about.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I'm going to stick with my recommendation.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to go against that recommendation. I was just thinking through, what is the end result of this? I think you're right. I think if this unearths things for you, then seeking a counselor or therapist or someone of that nature is absolutely what you should do. And I'm not dispelling that. But then I was trying to think, what is the point of what we're talking about? Why is it important on this podcast, right? Why should folks start thinking about this stuff?
I think my way of answering that is because you are thinking about it. You are acting out of it. Your body is reacting to it. Like, it's, we can't separate who we were from who we are. I mean, I think there's real value in living in the moment and all of those kinds of things. But I think if we neglect the totality of our history, we do so to our detriment. Was it Plato or Socrates who said the unexamined life is not worth living?
Doesn't matter. It's a good quote.
The unexamined life is not worth living. But I think part of that is the unexamined life will come up and bite you in the ass if you're not careful.
Boom. That was the money quote right there. They're going to etch that on in stone. It's the unexamined life is not worth living. Plato or Socrates, whoever said it. The unexamined life will come up and bite you in the ass if you're not careful. Sherry Walling.
And to that end, we've invited some very successful, very fantastic people to join us in doing a little bit of life examination. And these aren't therapy sessions, these are conversations, but they're conversations in which these founders reflect back on who they were as kids and how they were shaped by those experiences and ended up becoming the successful founders that they are now.
So tune in next week to hear our first interview with Heaton Shaw. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.